Okay. Take it away. My name, sir.
Sure. I'll introduce it. Yes. Today we will discuss the mental health sales tax. We have information about the history of our collection, the mathematics of it, and then we also have information about the rules governing this and laws that guide this and the things that drive the math that we get. And then I believe we also have information where we use this money here in Park County. So Vanessa Gaston is here. Adriana is here. They both are very much more knowledgeable than I am about this topic, and I'm going to turn it over to Adriana is there, Vanessa's here. So I don't know who's going first.
I can kick off the first slide here, which is basically summarizing the goal of the work session. Other than the background educational information that Jim mentioned, there's also an ask from the council with respect to this work session in terms of getting a permission to move forward with a mental health sales tax advisory board that would actually create a formal process for collecting and evaluating new funding requests out of this funding source, and serve as an advisory input body to the county manager as he develops his recommended budget for the council. And the way the presentation is organized, Vanessa will speak more to the substance and background and legal requirements of the mental health sales tax funding, and then the budget office will be presenting some information about the history of revenues and expenditures.
Yeah, it is noted on the handout. Emily is here to present information from the budget office.
So here's the agenda really quick, as we mentioned, background, legal statute, the tax rate and permissible uses for this funding source, an overview. This is the budget office part, an overview of the mental health sales tax revenue, history of revenue and expense, expenditure overview for the current budget, and some fund balance reserve considerations. And then Vanessa, I will hand it back to Vanessa, and she'll speak to the task force recommendations, and then we'll turn it over to the council for discussion and feedback. And I just want to specify that this preparing this work session has been a truly collaborative effort. There's been a group meeting regularly to put the presentation together and to vet the data that are being presented that have Superior Court, District Court, Community Services, Public Health, and the Budget Office, and the County Manager at the table preparing this information for you today. So that being said, I'll turn it over to Vanessa to start with some background information on the legislation that authorizes tax.
So good morning. Again, for those in the audience who don't know me, I'm Vanessa Gaston. I'm the Director for Community Services. I'm also representing the task force that came up with the recommendation that we'd like for you to consider today. And there's a number of the task force members in the audience today as well. So just to give you a little background, so the legislature passed some legislation, 5763, back in 2005, for counties to implement. You could have done a councilmatic or put it out for vote for to the voters. But the whole purpose was to help counties address people with behavioral health disorders, which are people with mental health and substance use disorders. And so it was a 1/10 of 1 cent sales tax that you could have enacted, and that was to help with some services and programming to help that specific population. Next slide.
Excuse me, if I could just interrupt one second. I was speaking to my colleague, not listening to you a second ago.
Okay.
So I apologize. The task force you're talking about, is that the Mental Health Sales Tax Advisory?
So there was initially, and it's part of the history. So maybe if I can just go to the next slide, because then I'll
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So when this was enacted in 2005, Clark County in 2007 created a community task force. And that task force, and Chair Boat was participating on that, and Glenn Olson, from the budget office also participated. And they had representations from Superior Court, District Court, my department, and the community who sat around and determined how to implement the funding and what to program funding. So it was almost a year-long process that they determine what to fund in 2008. The board at that time, the Clark County Commissioner, voted and approved what was funded.
It's 28 people.
Yes. It was a big, big inclusive process. Yes.
Vanessa, the city of Vancouver had a seat on that. Mark Bolt presented an invitation to the city of Vancouver to assign a council member. And I was the council member when I was at the city that represented the city and sat on this. So that's just another piece of historical information.
Oh, thank you. So to continue with my actual question, which is, does the Mental Health Sales Tax Advisory Board exist? Is that what you're saying?
No, we're going to request that be created.
Okay. So the task force members that are in the audience today are from this original 28-person?
No. So
who's out here?
So,
did you say?
let's go to the next slide. Let's go to the next slide. And I'm just going to basically hit on this. So some of you have asked, because I'm going to get to your question the very next slide. So some of the people have asked, what is the intent of this law? So this slide right here just lets you know how you can spend the fund and the intent of the law and what's in the RCW. We do have Amanda in the office if you have specific questions. But this is these are local funds. We collect them locally. There are for our county, for county residents. There are a number of counties who have enacted this law. You do have to make sure it is connected directly to people who have a mental health or substance disorder. And it is meant for some kind of programming around whether it's intervention, treatment, housing, transportation, case management. And I put in front of you guys a memo from Senator Hargrove. He sponsored this legislation, and he actually expanded what his intent was for this to include prevention and outreach. Okay, so you have that memo that happened in 2013. Most importantly, we can no longer use any kind of these funds for supplanting. So that ended in 2016. So this is for supporting new and expanded programs. It also supports our therapeutic courts that are both in district and superior courts. So and it's also meant to be flexible to help each community address their needs. So I just wanted, some of you have asked me that, so this is here for you, just so you know exactly what that is. Next slide. Let me just quickly do this so I can get to Councilor Quirin's question. So some people are, again, how do counties use this? So counties use this in collaboration with the state and federal dollars. So you have your federal Medicaid dollars, you have a block grant, you have a state general fund that fund the continuum of behavioral health system. So they will usually use these dollars to either support stuff in law enforcement, criminal justice, or gaps in services in the community. So that's kind of the intent of how counties use it. It varies because they meet their needs. And they also consider what's going to happen federally and statewide. So again, when we initially got this, there was no Medicaid expansion program. So we actually used quite a bit of this money to help with treatment in the community, supporting the therapeutic courts so people could get that treatment. When Medicaid expansion happened in 2014, a lot of those people got insurance through Medicaid. So if federally it changes again, where those people lose their eligibility for the Medicaid, you know, one of three things will happen. Either they're going to lose that eligibility and no longer have insurance, or they'll end certain benefits so they may not pay for certain mental health or drug and alcohol, or they'll reduce provider rates and some providers will no longer serve them. So those are things that each of the counties have to think about what to do with these different pots of money. So let's go to the next slide. So let me just address her question, then we can get to budget. So I want to say this summer, we were having a number of providers approaching either myself or Chair Boat asking for some of this pots of funding. And so at that time, the Strategic Leadership Team Committee, we had a conversation, and we actually approached the county manager at the time, who was Mark McCauley, about can we actually come up and maybe think about a process for how to deal with these requests instead of having these one-offs. So the county manager and Chair Boat supported it. A task force was created. And there was a slide here, and we'll get to that in a bit, but you're going to go over some budget, right? That, which are the members. And actually, if you want to look at the particular slide, since you're just going to be flexible and jumping around, it is on page 14. Those are the members of that task force that met for about, I think we had about 4 or 5 meetings, correct? Who actually came up with these recommendations that we're going to go over at the end for you to consider about how to deal with those one-off type of requests. Because right now there's no process, there's nothing. And so people will call you and say, hey, I want some of that funding. They'll call me, And it's not part of my budget process. So we're trying to figure out how to help you guys deal with those type of requests. So does that answer your question?
Kind of.
Okay.
It was really a simple question I was asking.
Okay.
Does it exist today?
Yeah. Well, there's actually, there was three tasks.
Are we forming another one?
Where there's another one. So there's been three task force that have been through this. So this has been a kind of a reiteration process.
It The answer I just got is it doesn't exist. A task force exists.
Not permanently.
We're looking to create another task force.
Yeah, but there was one in place. There was one in place. Two of them in place.
I know. I can tell.
Well, I think after we initially met 10 years ago with a group of 28 state members, and most of us are here today, we've gone along for years now.
So many years.
And as the need has arisen just recently and the crisis has increased just recently, as Vanessa says, other people are stepping forward.
They're asking.
We know, you know, how the funds were allocated initially. We know how we've been doing it over the years. But if there's other interested stakeholders, community members out there that feel that they have a need, how should we address it? So allow this group to provide new recommendations to answer those questions.
Thank you.
And additionally, we are looking at expanding or increasing fund balance right now because of the sales tax.
So that leads us to the budget.
Yeah.
So,
right. So yeah. We don't want that. We want to make sure that that money is being used for its intended purposes.
Yes.
We don't want it to sit in that account. So.
Emily Switzig from the Budget Office. I think I know everybody here. We have a few slides that talk about the budget and the current fund balance. This first slide just talks about the stakeholders that actually receive mental health sales tax dollars on an ongoing or one-time basis. And I think most everyone on that list is represented here today. The second slide, or the next slide, talks about our annual mental health sales tax revenues in millions, and it shows a history going back to the initiation of the fund. And you can see how we talk about it being very sensitive and volatile to economic trends. When you look at back in 2009, how it dropped from 5.3 million to 4.5 million based on the recession. We are anticipating an $8.4 million revenues for 2018.
Make a comment here. You may wonder when you see that big bump of $6.5 million in 2013, about half of that growth, what happened was literally a technical adjustment, an auditing accounting adjustment that happened for general fund sales tax as well. Basically, the state auditor said that we should recognize the revenues when they are accrued rather than when they are received, and there's a two-month delay in receiving sales tax. So for one time in 2013, we recognized 14 months of sales tax revenue instead of 12. So there's about $700,000 owed to us in fund balance that's accounted as part of fund balance. The cash is not there yet. It's always due to come within the next 2 months. So I just wanted to explain that odd bump in 2013.
And so this is consistently rising. So unlike some of our other sales tax, though, this is when we have an annexation, we still get this fund, correct? This is countywide, so in all the cities as well. So
you are correct. Okay. This is a countywide tax. Every county location charges this tax, and the services provided are countywide as well.
Thank you. The next slide just talks about expenditures and the history of expenditures for the fund. And you can see that for 2018, we're expected to have $7.7 million in expenditures. We are anticipating 3% growth in payroll in that 7.7 and 0% growth on every other part of it. The next slide shows the fund balance. This is a little bit of a complicated chart, but I hope it's helpful. The green bars are the fund balance, and the revenue is represented in green, and the expenses are represented in orange. And as you can see, the projected fund balance is expected to keep growing. For 2018, we're forecasted at $8.6 million fund balance. And I had some notes to talk about the accrual method here, but Adrian has already covered that.
And this fund balance is based on the current needs, right?
On the current
budget, so.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This is continuing forward all of the ongoing expenditures for the programs currently in place, and it is taking out any one-times, obviously, that occur in 17, 18, 2 annual increase in the sales tax revenue, which is the 10-year average of growth for this revenue.
This next slide talks about kind of how things are distributed. So this is a snapshot of 2017 with total expenses for programs at $7.1 million. And then it breaks down into specialty courts, the juvenile detention program, public health, Department of Community Services, and jail discharge planners, with some details. And there's some additional appendixes at the end of the PowerPoint that go into to more minutia about how this all breaks out, but we just want to give you a picture of kind of how things are distributed. And then this last slide for the budget section talks about how we don't currently have a fund balance policy for this fund, and that we probably need to consider one, and we need one. Some of the main things to consider as we move forward in developing a fund balance policy is the need for sufficient cash for quarterly transfers to community service. Also, the volatility of the revenue, which we've already talked about a little bit, and existing funding obligations to continue multi-year program services for clients that are currently in service. So if we were to have a drop in revenue, we need to consider how we would finish those services out for the people that are already currently receiving services. And it's usually a two-year?
It's about 1 to 2 years, the length of stay in the program funded by this funding source. 1 to 2 years length of stay for clients in these programs. And this is a very volatile revenue source. So in the case of a recession, it would be wise to have sufficient funding in fund balance to be able to continue treatment services for the clients currently in those programs.
And I think that's the end of the budget portion. We'll pass it back to Vanessa to...
So again, this is, I covered this slide already, but so this was the second task force created. It was short-term in nature, and the whole goal was to determine, can we come up with some kind of recommendation to bring back to the board to kind of help you guys deal with a more kind of more sustainable long-term approach for how to deal with funding requests for this particular funding source. So, again, these were the members. Many of them are in the audience today. So next slide. So let's just get right into the recommendations. So one of the things that we are actually going to recommend to you guys is that we actually create an ongoing advisory board that will consist of subject matter experts to kind of look at new funding requests and provide some kind of qualitative feedback back to the county manager on kind of what our suggestions would be on how to, which particular program requests, new funding program requests, should be funded. And again, it would be up to the county manager, so those requests, those recommendations would go to the county manager. We are recommending that for history's sake and consistency, historical perspectives, is that some of the original task force members that were a part of the initial one in 2008 and also were the ones in the summertime continue to serve on the advisory board because you have good representations from the different departments who come from different perspectives. We also have been acknowledged that if there are conflicts with any one of us, that we recuse ourselves. So we're all well of that, aware of that. And then we would also make sure that this advisory board would collect and evaluate, come back to you guys with a process, but we would make sure that that process included, you know, what would that look like? How would we make sure internal and external partners that, but we would collect and evaluate in these new refunding requests and provide that in a timely manner back to the county manager to include in the county manager's budget back to you guys for you to make the final decision. Next slide. This is just some of the criteria we talked about. Well, what would we use to kind of help us make that, make those determinations? And so I just kind of want to highlight some of these. And this is our last slide before we open it up to conversation. So one of the things is that we want to make sure that it aligns to what your priorities are for your funding. So Clark County Council's priorities of funding. Because there are other funding sources out there that can fund some behavioral services, we want to make sure that this is payer of last resort. We want to make sure we're just following the law around no supplantation. We want to make sure that there's actually a need for the program. So, you know, can they demonstrate the need for that? We would prefer to have programs that are best practice or research evidence-based. We want to make sure we're not duplicating in the community because there's very finite resources and we need to stretch these out as much as possible. We want to make sure what we're buying has some good performance outcomes and we can actually show that we're doing something positive with them. Of course, the intent is to serve low-income at-risk populations, again, with behavioral health disorders. We want to make sure we have a strategic plan so that whatever we're doing is aligning with that strategic plan. We want to leverage all the other dollars in the community so, again, we can continue with that continuum of services. And then we want to make sure that these services are available across the county, so not one particular area in the county. So that is what we came up with as that task force in the summertime came up with. We all agreed to this, and that was what we were recommending that we would use and present to you guys. So our recommendation here, next slide, is that you would think about and consider creating this advisory board that would come back to you guys with a process that we would use for the next biennial budget for these particular requests, because there are people in the community who are asking and inquiring about this fund. So
maybe before we move ahead with the discussion, we could have the folks that are attending today introduce themselves. So
we
could just go around the room.
Chris Simmons Meyer, Juvenile Court Administrator.
I'm Judge Rulli from the Superior Court.
We're good. Mark Bolt, counsel.
I think
we're good.
Okay.
I'm Lindsay Schaefer. I'm the policy analyst to the County Council.
Thank you. So, questions?
Vanessa, I have a couple of questions of the task force. When we originally started the task force, we concentrated on a lot of best practices, research-based. Then at that time, there was things in the therapeutic courts and the juvenile court that really weren't research-based, but we had a good, pretty good feeling that it would go. And you made them go. Them are now research-based. The question I have is there's always new things on the market. And so some counties are just saying, you know, if it's tried and true, you can do it. But if it's something new, you know, go somewhere else. And we've kind of always tried to carve out a little bit of them things that will say, we'll have faith in you to try it out, you know, because that's what local funding gives you, is that you're not tied so much to a lot of things that you can give that. So my question would, two questions would be, in this task force, does them people, whether they want to do housing or things like that, have the ability to come to that group with maybe them ideas, you know, to flesh them ideas out? And also, since this is countywide, how does the request from a city, because the cities were originally involved in it, we went to every city and said, we're here to serve you, so how do they get their input?
So I would say first is yes, we would accept any kind of proposal. That's why it's not we didn't make it a requirement. We said prefer.
Right.
So anybody can submit any kind of proposal as long as you kind of make sure it's within the county, it's for people with behavioral health issues, and you meet the kind of the intent of the law. So we would accept any of that. It's just put the word prefer. So that's not a requirement.
Okay.
The other piece is we're open. You guys add anybody you want to the advisory board. We're just saying for some consistency, try to keep some of the people that were from 2008 to 2017 as part of it, because they bring a lot of the history of kind of how we got to where we're going. So,
subject matter
experts, yes.
Yeah.
So,
take the mic for this one. I started the drug court, the adult drug court program in 2000. And at that time, it was because I have a full-time job over there. It became one of my responsibilities and my weekly rotation of responsibilities. The prosecuting attorney, the defense bar, they were all for the concept of starting a therapeutic court in Vancouver, Washington. This is something that is, you know, it started years ago in Florida when they had the influx of the cocaine problem, and Janet Reno was the attorney general in the state of Florida. That's when it started back in the early 90s. The second court was in Seattle, and then from there it came down to Portland, and it just it exploded nationwide. There's over 3,000 therapeutic courts nationwide now. So this concept of drug courts isn't something that's going away. It is the way to practice, the best practice. We have evaluations. Sean McCloskey, our drug court coordinator, has evaluations just recently that we had finished for that purpose, to show that best practice shows that your dollar is better spent by treating people instead of incarcerating them. I was a criminal defense attorney for many years before I took the bench, and I saw the repetitions going on there, the revolving door syndrome is what we call it. They go in, they come out, they go in, they come out. And it's just attacks on all points of our system here, whether it's the jail, whether it's the sheriff, whether it's the prosecutor, the defense bar, it hits all those areas. Mark raises an interesting point that, what about this housing aspect? I learned early on that if you don't have adequate housing for these people, it's not going to work. It simply will not work. They're going to go back to their old habitat, and they're going to start right over again because that's all they know, that's all they've lived by. So, yes, housing is an essential component of treatment. And, you know, for years I said, well, why can't we have that big building prosecutor's attorney's offices in now? That would have been ideal. Now I'm saying, well, why can't we have some of the beds out at the VA? They got a lot of empty buildings out there. Why can't we ask about those beds? So there's always ideas on the horizon that we can explore, and I think that's the focus that we need to do in our therapeutic courts and generally for our community, because you can't walk down to the waterfront project without passing the guys in the blue tents under the Grant Street overpass. I mean, it is sad, but it is the state of what we're looking at. So the only way to change that is to help these people through treatment and provide them the services that we can afford to provide. So hopefully this task force that we've set up many years ago can continue to help in addressing those problems.
I think this is a good idea. I'm supportive of the idea of the task force. A couple of comments. I think that first one on the previous slide about sitting down with the council and it's doing one-on-ones, kind of talk about what are our priorities early on in the process. So I appreciate that was on there, but making sure that that happens and that there's continual dialogue between the task force and the council. And then on the duplication of services, I think in some ways of looking at evaluating what we are currently doing to see can we do it more efficiently and more effectively, so not just assume that, okay, we're treating this population with this program right now. Mm-hmm. Is there something new that maybe we could get better results or more efficient use of those resources? So if not just assuming that, well, we're already treating this population, we're not going to look at a new program for that, saying, okay, is this new proposal or new program maybe a more effective way of doing that?
And just to add, at the end of your presentation, you have a list of what's being funded now. So just so you're aware what those programs are.
And I had a question. Back to the housing for a moment. I did see that. It's in our packet. Are we talking about housing during treatment?
No, that's considered residential treatment. So we're talking about actually when they get out and they're an outpatient or something, actual places for them to live.
Well, actually, it is a component. Okay.
Yeah.
As they're going through outpatient treatment, where they're living is a very significant factor.
Okay.
Because the children that we address in the juvenile setting, if they're going back to an environment where mom and dad are smoking dope in the front room, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
That is a challenge that we have, the most difficult problems with.
And so as you think, as some of the ideas that you were even suggesting or that you had thought of, sounds to me it's a little bit institutional, and that would be great. I'm not, is that what you're talking about?
So there's two components. So when you talk about inpatient residential treatment, those are like Lifeline Connections. People actually live there while
yes.
they're in treatment. and they stay from 30 to 60 days.
I understand.
Then you have actually what we're trying to do, like with Meriwether, where it's actually, you'll have treatment providers on the first floor, and people actually live in apartments. And so if they need to have treatment after hours, there's somebody there to help them, but it's like they're living. But they will be in treatment, and some people, whether they go to another clinic or not. So you have the permanent supportive housing, and then you have, like, residential treatment.
Okay. That answers that question. Now I just wanted to ask another one, and that is the cost of services. How has that fluctuated, and has it exponentially increased, or how would you explain that over time, since
over
2008?
So we definitely paid way more treatment in the past prior to 2014 because people were uninsured. So we paid a lot for detox, inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment, because they didn't have insurance. And as people know, with people with drug and alcohol, there's a lot of high recidivism. And so they need to go through treatment quite a bit. So we spent more on direct treatment in the past. I would say over time, once people get into recovery, you'll start to see costs go down for jails, emergency rooms, whatever, because they start to get into jobs. If you can get some housing over, just like Judge Rulli says, if you can get them into some housing, your costs start to go down. But all of that is much cheaper than to send them to jail or prison.
Yes.
So that's what they're. So, and there's definitely data. I know DSHS has studied this, and so they can give you some statewide data about how much you spend in treatment, how much you save. What is it? Like every dollar you spend, you save like two or three.
Shauna has some information too, but one of the recent ones is for every dollar invested, there is a $27 return. And that covers, that covers all kinds of costs.
So what would be the sort of a timeline or schedule for the new group with regard to getting budget recommendations to the county manager?
So we would definitely have to operate on the timeline for the next biennial budget, and so we would have to know kind of when the county manager would need to have it, so we would kind of work back from there. And then if there's additional members you guys want to see on the advisory board, we need to find out who those are, and we would need to start meeting because we need to come back to you with a process. What does this process look like? And then if you want us to do one-on-ones, we'll need to also include that as part of it so we can hear what your thoughts are as far as the priority. So all of that, we'll probably have to work back from the date of the deadline to get to the county manager. So.
Well, before Jim, and I would say I think it's coming sooner than we think because we're going to have to make a decision maybe soon on the triage center, how we operate that, if there's enough funds there. There may not be enough funds there that, at least that conversation. Also, City of Vancouver is trying to figure out how to make their round hole to fit our square peg as much as possible. So they'll be asking, can we somehow do something with mental health funding in that day center? I mean, that's either a yes or no, but that's going to be a question that hopefully we don't get hit with, but somebody steps up and says the hard answer, yes or no.
So I would say, so the answer to your question for the homeless day center, actually that's part of my budget that I have now you've already approved as part of my plan to help people that are homeless with behavioral health. So that's not new requests coming to the council.
Okay.
Unless one of those providers wants to do a new program in that building,
that would
be a new request to consider. Yeah. So that wouldn't be part of this.
Okay.
They're looking for the recording fees. That's what they want, which is a separate pot of money. The crisis triage piece, again, when we did our legislative proposal to build that, I had already put some of my budget aside to build it, so I have some dollars already for that's not a new request either, unless something new wants to be built into that building that can't be currently funded. So.
And we spoke about that the other day. We have a temporary site, but what I took away was that may not be the permanent site. So there may be some new requests related to that this could be a part of?
For a permanent, yes.
For permanent, right.
Yeah.
On the timing with the budget, I would say, and Adriana, correct me, I would say as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Say within 30 days, get the task or the advisory board appointed and get them meeting. Because it's complex. There's a lot of money here, a lot of programs to figure out, how's it going, where you know, is there a redirection? Because the budget process will be upon us sooner than we think.
New requests are due June 8th, according to the budget calendar. However, the budget office releases the forms and the instructions in early April, so it'd be nice to be able to build the process in with special instructions for this funding source.
So, and just a review for, I did this with the council, the budget process generally is in the spring, setting guidelines, predicting where we're going to be is in the spring. Summer is gathering information regarding funding proposals, and the fall is then sorting that out. And just preliminarily, as long as we have folks here that are listening, things do not look good for the next biennium budget. I think we've talked about this in the past, especially for the general fund supported departments. There will be reductions.
So, Vanessa, the communication between the city and the county has been a little jagged regarding this matter. So they have thought that they looked carefully at what resources the county has and where those resources are. What we don't have as information is what sources the county has in any participation for like housing. Mm-hmm. So they have a CDBG program and a home program that parallels dollar-wise and process-wise similar to ours mm-hmm. that we have at the county and in similar dollar amount. It'd be really good if we could get information about what funding they have, not how they're allocating it, but just in general what's available, so that when we have the communication, it's not like missing the cue about understanding. So
that's funding from the city, you mean?
Yeah, the city of Vancouver, because they get, you know, they are their own agent for block grant funding and home funding.
So the budget office is currently working together with the auditor's office to develop, to do an analysis and develop recommendations for creating fund balance policies for major funds, starting with the most critical ones. And this is one that's at the top of the list. So we would actually work together with the task force on those recommendations. And the criteria, we pretty much know that we need some cash in fund balance to be able to transfer funds to community services. They don't have reserves where they can spend them and get reimbursed, so we have to forward transfers. So there's a cash flow need. And then it's the sales tax volatility revenue and the amount of time that clients are around in the programs to ensure that we can continue providing those services in case of a recession downturn of the economy. So those will be the major considerations, unless experts from this task force have other suggestions to add to that. So,
looking at the task force that was created, that the comments that I had were maybe adding someone from budget and someone from the auditor's office. So I think those would be, as they, what Adriana just said, those two would be good additions to the task force.
Any other comments? I guess to get to the business of the advisory board, the ongoing advisory board. Opinions about the composition in addition to those.
Did you say cities?
Yeah, might be. At least, yeah.
Small cities.
Yeah.
So represent from all the city?
Yeah.
And Vanessa, I'm interested in serving on that task force as having come out of the original task force and being one of the primary representatives, mm-hmm. My district. City of Vancouver.
So I have budget, auditor, small, all the cities, and Councilor Stewart.
And so the first thing would be looking at the existing existing budget and then moving that forward to the county manager.
I think we would actually need to develop a process like how would you let the community, internal, external partners know when and how to submit proposals? What's the criteria?
Right. Yeah.
We would just need to draft up something to bring back for everybody to look at. And then we would need to work with the budget office on a process to put that out so we can start getting those requests and actually start implementing it. So
the intent is really for new requests, not for looking at the existing budget. So this task force would not reconsider the existing funding that's already allocated
that's what
and carried
I'm asking.
Forward. I thought that's what you were asking.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Because you have your core services, you know, we don't want to hash your program every year, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and probably, you know, because I know Alan is jumping up and down, you know, keeping Durst Family Partnership. And so, in the core services.
Yeah, so thank you for clarifying. Thank you, because I didn't understand it. So, no, we would not look at, that's not the board's role, is look at current funding stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
I think we'll do it if we have to figure out what it's going to invite out.